ORT 89.9 FM, Madison.
Hey! What are you trying to do? You ruined my record, man! I just bought it!
Did you realize this year's Record Store Day is April 20th, also known as 420? We here at WORT are certainly aware, and as a matter of fact, we're throwing a party at the Crystal Corner Bar with two great local bands, Iftikhar and the Earthlings, supplemented by sets from WORT DJs, Julia McAnley from Her Infinite Variety, Brian Hirsch from Green Morning Radio, and New Phone Rick of XL290 Live Music Radio Hour. So we'll see you at the Crystal Corner, Saturday, April 20th, for our Record Store Day and 420 celebration with Iftikhar, the Earthlings, and WORT DJs.
Welcome to the Access Hour, where each week WORT offers you the opportunity to fly your program over the radio. The Access Hour is WORT's commitment to community access to the airwaves. For this hour, we have turned the airwaves over to a member of the public. The views expressed on the Access Hour do not represent the views of the station, its staff, programmers, or the board of directors. We'd like this show to be as unpredictable as possible, so we need your creative ideas. It's a fair trade. You give us what you've got, and we give you the facilities and any help you need to get your program airborne. So let your mind wander and wonder. And when the inspiration for some pretty good radio glows with a clear, bright light, get in touch. Just go to WORTFM.org and look on the left side for Sign Up to Host an Access Hour. Programs are scheduled first come, first served. And now it's time to begin another foray into the freest form program on the WORT schedule, the Access Hour.
Hello, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning in. My name is Tess. I'm with Fair Share CSA Coalition. We're excited to be here for this week's Access Hour. To kick us off, over the next hour, we're going to be discussing community-supported agriculture, what it is, and how does it add to vibrant food systems, the importance of local farms and farmers in creating sustainable food systems and community resilience, and we'll also be doing a Q&A with a few of the growers we work with who joined us in studio and hear from a few who sent in some audio clips. So before we dive in, I thought it'd be helpful to know who's in the studio with us. As I said, I'm Tess. I'm with Fair Share, and I'm the Communications and Development Manager.
Hi there, my name is Levi Bird, and I'm the program intern with FairShare.
Hello, my name is Merritt Hovey, and I am an organic vegetable farm manager apprentice at Crossroads Community Farm.
Hello, I am Chang Rai Lor. I am the aggregation coordinator for FairShare CSA Coalition.
Hi. I'm Claire Stoner-Faisenfeld. Sorry, I've got a little bit of a cold, but I'm the executive director at Fair Share CSA Coalition. I'm really happy to be here today.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for listening tonight. My name is Scott Lasser. My wife and I run Plowshares and Prairie Farm in southwest Wisconsin. We are just starting our 12th season on the farm.
Hi, everyone. This is Caroline Phelan, and I'm with Fair Share as the administrative coordinator.
Wonderful. So now we know who's in the room. As we mentioned, we are with Fair Share CSA Coalition. So what is CSA? Community Supported Agriculture, or CSA, is a concept where you buy a share in a farm at the beginning of the growing season, and then you receive products from the farm throughout the season. Essentially, it's an upfront investment in a farm in exchange for a season of fresh food. And CSA can look a lot of different ways to a lot of different farms. That's one of the benefits of the model, is that it's very flexible. But in essence, the core principles of CSA are a direct connection to your farmer. So you know exactly who grows your food and how it's grown. It's the concept of shared risk, shared bounty, or investing in fresh food and local food. And community involvement and support. Community support is in the name. So it's community-supported agriculture. The concept of CSA originated in the United States in the 1960s with Dr. Booker T. Watley, a black farmer and agricultural professor at Tuskegee University. And Dr. Watley believed that small farms can achieve financial sustainability by directly marketing products to consumers through clientele membership clubs, which is what they were called at the time. The clubs were similar to what we know now as the modern CSA, except members were expected to harvest the food themselves. While many of our farms in our coalition have UPIC options, today's CSA shares come pre-harvested. So that's a relief for people who don't want to pick their own food. And as I mentioned, one of the reasons many farms use the CSA model today is because of its flexibility. Each farm can decide how to operate their CSA in a way that makes the most sense for their farm. So we're going to be diving in and answering a few of the most frequently asked questions about CSA shares. As I mentioned, it is flexible. So this is kind of a broad overview of CSA in general. But I'm going to toss it to Caroline. Caroline, how does CSA work?
Yeah, what a great question, Tess. So you might be wondering, you know, CSA for me, CSA actually has many different options in terms of the types of shares that are available. Farms offer anything from a standard share that runs all summer. There's also small shares for if you're looking for more of an individual size or two people. Nowadays, farms are also offering a more flexible option where you can pick up your vegetables at the market and decide what exactly you want using a market card. Sometimes with those shares, you also get a particular discount on things at the stand. Another option that people tend to like is the customizable shares where you can decide, hey, I don't really like kohlrabi that much. I don't necessarily want to have it in my share this week. And so you're able to kind of swap that out for another variety.
Thanks, Caroline. What's your CSA type?
I really like probably more of the small share for the summer, just since I'm usually cooking for myself and maybe my girlfriend. But it's also awesome to do a variety of add-ons. In particular, in the past, I've gotten Blue Roof Orchards apple share, and that's delicious. You can also get eggs or flowers or grains.
Cool. Well, that's a great segue to the next question. Claire, what should I expect in my box each week once the season starts?
So one of my favorite parts about having a CSA is that you never know what you're going to get. And I always love cooking with the constraints. So you get a box of stuff, and then you have to figure out what to do with it. So in the spring, for example, you're going to get a lot of greens. You might get some garlic, sometimes some ramps, asparagus, all that good spring fresh veggie stuff. In the summer, you're going to get peak season vegetables like tomatoes, eggplant, zucchini. Sometimes you'll get fruit in your box like strawberries or even some blueberries, depending on the farm. And then in the fall, you're going to get storage veggies like sweet potatoes, squash, corn, some onions, things that you can typically keep over the winter season to tide you over until the next year CSA starts. And then you can also get add-ons to some of your CSA shares. So some farms will have add-ons like honey, eggs, or meat that you can get with your delivery. And then other CSAs are not vegetable-focused. Fair Share CSA Coalition, our heart is vegetable farmers, but you can actually get meat CSAs, flour CSAs, grain, fish CSAs, all sorts of community-supported food shares. So there's lots of different options, and the sky is really the limit.
Awesome. Thanks, Claire. Scott, I'm going to turn it over to you. As a farmer, what is the benefit for when your members pay upfront for your share?
Well, obviously that allows farmers to take the money and run and then spend the summer sitting on the porch with a cold beverage in the evenings. No, there are a lot of benefits from a farmer perspective to having customers join the farm early in the season, quite frankly, when income on the farm is really low. All you have to do is be in Wisconsin right now to know that there's not a whole lot growing yet. And if, as vegetable farmers, we don't have a lot growing, we don't have a lot to sell. But we're making a lot of investments in the season right now. We've already purchased our seeds. We've purchased a lot of our fertilizers, despite the fact that there's not a lot at farmers markets at this point that is freshly grown. We are out in the field, and we will be out in the field in the next weeks planting crops to get ready for the season ahead. So that upfront payment allows us to make some of those early season investments. And just as importantly, it allows us to plan for the season ahead so we can have a sense of the type of investments that we're going to make and the number of crops that we're going to grow. And having that reliable market that comes with CSA is a significant benefit as a farmer.
Thanks, Scott. So we've heard the benefits from a farmer perspective. Levi, what are the benefits of getting a CSA share from the consumer perspective?
Oh, I'm glad you asked us. I am really excited because this is my first year getting to start with a CSA. And so I think what I'm really looking forward to, especially from hearing from so many Partner Shares members and from other people on the Fair Share staff, is getting to know who grows the food that I'm cooking with. Like getting to know where it comes from, whose hands have like labored over it for so long, and getting to enjoy that and have gratitude for that and know that, you know, some of my money can go to support those people who are local to us. So I feel like that's one of the biggest piece that you mentioned is the direct connection and the relationships building with farmers. I think from the other side of things, like Claire mentioned, it's really exciting to try out new recipes. I'm particularly excited to get a Fair Share cookbook at some point so that way I can try out some of the recipes in there and learn a little bit more about, you know, how to store certain vegetables that I've never worked with before. I have never cooked eggplant in my life. So it would be really great to know, you know, what are some of the great recipes that can bring out that vegetable's like hallmarks? Yeah, I think those are a few of the things that come to mind.
Great. Yeah, it's like a little food adventure in every box.
Exactly.
Merritt, how long does the season usually last?
Well, the CSA season, it does change very by the farm, but a pretty standard is from about the first week of June to the beginning to mid-October. Some farms do things like a fall share or a winter share, so you can extend the season if you want to get more food throughout the year. But yeah, pretty standard is like 18 weeks from about June to October.
Wonderful. And Chiang Rai, can I visit the farm?
Most definitely, yes. But I would say that it does depend on the farm. You can definitely visit them if they have like events. A lot of farms, they have their own types of events. What it ranges from farm dinners. You come and you pick your own vegetables. And yeah, sometimes they even have their own visitation hours that you can stop by to tour their farm. And but more or less, the majority of CSA farms, they tend to have their consumers come and pick up the farm, and that gives them an opportunity to tour the farm during that time.
Great, thank you. And so we talked about this idea of shared risk, shared bounty, and members kind of pay at the beginning of the season. So Scott, what happens if there's a crop failure or weather issues?
So, you know, farms are some of the most vulnerable and most dependent small businesses when it comes to Mother Nature's whims. And in this era of climate change that has only been driven home for, I would say, all farmers. And so really the question is what happens when there's a crop failure or a mm-hmm. weather issue. And part of the reason that, you know, we diversify the crops that we grow on our farm is we recognize that there are always going to be better years and worse years for certain crops. And in fact, different crops like different conditions. Tomatoes like it hot and broccoli likes it cool and spinach likes it cool and melons like it hot and some crops like it drier and some crops like it wetter. So really when one crop thrives, often some other crops won't do quite as well. And what we try to do as a farm is we try to plan to the extent that we can for a certain level of that failure, and we diversify the crops that we grow. So while last year, we didn't have the best year for broccoli because we had some disease issues in the fall. We had a really good tomato year. And I think a lot of crops lean into the diversification of the vegetables that they grow in order to account for that uncertainty and the challenges that we now face with the changing weather conditions.
Thanks, Scott. Our final FAQ of CSA, how do I find a CSA share? It's one of our most popular or most sought after answers. Obviously, the internet is a great place to start. Googling CSA share near me, depending on where you're at, and you'll get some good results. Asking at local farmers markets or places that carry local produce is also a good place. And then Fair Share's online farm search tool on our website provides searchable options on share type, season, size, pickup location, all the things that you're thinking about when you're looking for a CSA. You can kind of search if you're in the Midwest. It's a great resource on our website. So now that we've learned a little bit more about what CSA is, we're going to hear an audio clip from our farmer Bethany at Winterfell Acres on why CSA is such an important part of her farm.
My name is Bethany Wright, and I am owner farmer of Winterfell Acres in Brooklyn, Wisconsin. I've been farming since 2013 with my own CSA. I'm a mother and a farmer, and CSA is the heart of our family farm. We grow on 1 acre for about 100 families for the summer CSA. And last year we grew over 30,000 pounds of produce. When I first began my CSA, it really felt like CSA was the only option for me as a farmer. At that time, the Madison markets were very full and I didn't have any wholesale contacts yet. So CSA felt like the right choice, and I was able to really lean into my community and friends and family to support me in that first year. And now I just have continued to lean into CSA as the heart of our farm, because farming is really hard work. And knowing where so much of our produce goes to our committed farm members, that really fuels my love for this work. There are many challenges daily with farming in general, but I often remind my apprentices that CSA is considered the PhD of farming. We grow over 50 different annual crops and countless more perennial crops over a long growing season and fill hundreds of boxes each week without skipping a beat. It's really this beautiful collaboration with nature, the plants, and the land, an orchestration that is moved by so many forces, from the weather to seed supply to disease and pests to getting up and even when you're not feeling well and going out and watering the greenhouse and doing chores. It's a really beautiful way of life. One of the ways my love of this work has expanded in the last couple of years is I hired my first formal apprentice through the Organic Farm Manager program that FairShare supports. And while I was nervous to commit to somebody for 2 years and support them through some schooling as well, it has been such a gift to be able to take what has been so intuitively learned for me over the years, working for myself, certainly working almost exclusively for myself until my first daughter was born in 2018, and taking that and sharing that and learning myself how to teach something that has been so intuitive and embodied, and begin to teach my apprentices. So Hannah just graduated last fall, and now we also have Calvin, who is in just beginning in his first year. And I'm just grateful for my apprentices and their graciousness with my learning curve as I figure out how to teach them all of this, all of these things that has taken me 10 plus years to learn and hone and really make my life, that is really my life's work. One of the biggest adjustments I've had to make over the years in relation to farming has actually been surrendering or softening into the integration of being a farmer and a mother. And viewing it more as a lifestyle and bringing my daughters into that work, which in 2020, I didn't really have much of a choice in that and was kind of thrown into it. I farmed full time pretty much with my 18-month-old Tilly at the time. And now she's 5 years old and she helps me all around the farm and really brings a lot of joy to our work. And so that has often meant letting go of the need to do things really quickly, to get tasks done. So tasks go slower, which back when I was farming by myself, it was always like, okay, let's get all the tasks done and then rest. So it's just more integrated. And I know I will just have to come back and finish something later. So it's really a lifestyle, an integrated lifestyle, which I have been better about surrendering to since my second daughter was born.
Thanks for sending in that clip, Bethany. I'm going to bring it back in studio now for another farmer question. Scott, can you talk for a minute about why your farm, Plowshares and Prairie, decided on the CSA model and how it integrates into your goals for the farm?
When we were thinking about getting into farming, neither my wife or I grew up on a farm. We were really drawn to CSA because of the predictability and the market structure that it offered as a farm. We both appreciate the opportunity to plan and have some sense of the vegetables that we want available each week. About 80% of the produce that we grow on our farm, goes to CSA. So we don't have a lot of additional outlets. So knowing who's going to be getting produce from us as we go into the season is really helpful. And we really also love the opportunity to interact with our customers. We've got a couple of customers that have been with us since year one, and they talk about how they've raised their kids on our vegetables, and they talk about the vegetables that their kids like and they don't like. And I'm really envious when they talk about how their kids will eat vegetables when my farm kids are not that into vegetables right now. But I'm hoping it's just a phase and that we get over that. And it gives us a chance to a couple of times a year to introduce our customers to what life is like on the farm and to give them a chance to see where their vegetables are growing, and for us to show a little bit of this enterprise that we put so much blood, sweat, and tears into, not necessarily in that order, thankfully. but you know, farming is an intensely personal profession, and you often live where you work. You never finish working, and you can often always see what you need to do next. You can't fully escape it. And so there's a certain appreciation and love and integration into life beyond just a job that you have to embrace as a farmer. And CSA has really allowed us to lean into the aspects of that enterprise that we enjoy.
Thanks, Scott. I would say food in general is also such a personal thing. We've discussed how one of the core concepts of the CSA model is the upfront payment before the season begins. And Scott, you talked about why that's important for the farmer. But for many folks who are looking at purchasing a CSA, that upfront payment can be cost prohibitive, especially when they're on a tight budget. So Levi, I'm going to pass it to you for a couple minutes to talk about how food access and equity work pairs with the CSA model.
Thanks, Tess. I'm actually really excited to talk about this topic related to food access and equity. And I want to start by being transparent and saying that as a program intern, I'm very new to food access and food systems work. And there is so much history and work that has been done prior to me entering the space. So before we dive deep into the work at FairShare related to food access and equity, I want to use two general definitions that helped me understand food security and insecurity a little bit better. It's from the World Health Organization. So they define food security as access to sufficient food for a healthy and active life for all household members at all times, whereas food insecurity is when at least one person in the household experiences insufficient or uncertain access to food at some point in the year. So this is the base of the knowledge and information that we're going to work from today. And with that, I'll pass it on to a clip from our program director, Liv, for a Partner Shares program overview.
Hey folks, my name is Liv Froelich, and I'm the program director at FairShare, and I've been with the organization for just about 5 years. While my role has changed a lot over the years, a through line of my work has been overseeing our Partner Shares program and our food access work. So FairShare was established in 1992, and Partner Shares was established just a few years later in 1996. One of the unique aspects of the CSA model is the upfront payment at the beginning of the season. While that payment allows farms to make necessary investments in their business during a period of the year that they generally aren't generating much revenue, that high upfront cost can also be prohibitive to individuals and households with more limited income. So FairShare created the Partner Shares program to address that barrier. The program has evolved a lot over the years, but at its essence, it is a cost-sharing model that allows households to receive up to $350 of assistance towards the cost of their CSA share. We are approaching nearly 30 years of running this program. And when we started, we were supporting about 10 households in the Madison area. And today, the program has grown to serve over 360 households across 5 states, 75 cities and 39 counties, with demand growing more and more each year. That has been especially true since 2020 and 2021, when COVID really threw in stark light the need for local, fresh, and healthy food. We also recognize that no one household experiences food insecurity in the same way, and that is especially true given the wide geographic region that we are serving. And so we've worked to make the program as flexible and adaptable to individual circumstances as possible. Assistance is administered using a sliding scale model that households can select for themselves. We also work with applicants to create customized payment plans that allow folks to pay over a timeline that works for them and accept whatever payment works for them, and that includes SNAP and EBT benefits. Equally important, we found, is having consistent one-on-one support for applicants to ask questions, get pointed to CSA farms in their area, and troubleshoot if any issues arise during the season. We believe that everyone has the right to fresh and healthy food of their choosing, and making that economically feasible is just one slice of the pie. Location, cultural relevance of produce, the time needed to cook, transportation, and language accessibility are all additional factors that might preclude someone from having those choices. So every year we make sure to hear back from partner shares participants and ask them what's worked well and what needs changing. And we're continually making updates to the program to determine how we can move across that continuum of being a program that supports food access to a program that really centers food justice. Luckily, we aren't doing this work alone, and we're fortunate to have so many people and partners doing this work alongside us. From every farm that joins Fair Shares Coalition because they want to make food more accessible to their community members, to local organizations offering wraparound services and increasing overall stability for households. And of course, each and every participant in this program that highlights their desire to be supporting local growers despite more limited resources. Strengthening local food systems is reliant on support from everyone at all levels in the community. And each year that I've been at Fair Share, I see that in the work that we are doing in the community that we are a part of.
Now that we have that overview and history, let's talk about where the Partner Shares program fits in resources in our community related to food insecurity. What comes to mind when you first think of potential resources? You might think about food pantries, SNAP EBT or food share benefits, or even local food drives in your community. Food pantry and food drives are often considered to be emergency food resources because the intention is to help people who don't have any food or very little food on their table right now. In comparison, financial assistance programs like Partner Shares may also support families and households who are already able to buy some food on their own and need assistance to reach that level of sufficient food for a healthy and active life. So Liv touched on the sliding scale a little bit, and I want to expand on that. We provide some general guidelines to applicants for deciding how much assistance they need. Someone with high medical bills and an average income in the area may need less assistance than someone with high medical bills and low income. So we let families decide what seems most appropriate for them and what they feel they're able to afford. Then we use 200% of the federal poverty line to guide ourselves at Fair Share as we process financial assistance applications. What we look for are applicants who are significantly outside of the income eligibility guidelines. So they might be $10,000 or more above, you know, that 200% of the federal poverty line. And we reach out to them to have a more in-depth conversation about what level of support feels best for them. Some applicants decide after that conversation to move down the sliding scale to a lower assistance amount, and others stay right where they were in their application. So while we help people who may already be receiving some benefits for buying food, we also help people who, for example, have high medical bills or are recently retired and have a significant change in income. In the application process, PartnerShares members also select their preferred payment method, which sometimes changes after they know how much they'll be responsible for paying. We're able to process credit card payments, checks, and as Liv mentioned, SNAP and EBT benefits. And for some PartnerShares members, we work with them on a custom payment plan that combines these payment methods into something that feels affordable. Overall, we do our best to find the sweet spot for assistance level and payment schedule that'll work best for our PartnerShares members. The goal of this program is to support people who want access to fresh food through the CSA model to get that access, and many of them really want their dollars to go to local farms. In addition to providing support for individual households, we also have the community partnerships programs, where nonprofits, food pantries, and other groups partner with farms to provide food to families in their communities who may not be able to afford their own CSA shares for the season. I'll turn it over to Paul from Rooted and Troy Farm, one of our partners in this side of the program, for a recording that he sent in.
Hi, my name is Paul Huber, and I'm the farm director at Troy Farm and Rooted. So Rooted is a nonprofit in Madison whose mission is collaborations rooted in food, land, and learning. And Troy Farm is one program amongst many in Rooted. We're actually located on the north side of Madison on a beautiful 26-acre property that has land set aside for different things like agricultural production, prairie, walking trails, forested areas, and community gardens. And at Troy Farm, we do a lot of different things, including supporting and collaborating with six other growers and organizations. Those are Farm Her Greens, Trade Roots, Youth Empowerment Initiatives, Occupy Madison, Troy Composting, and Young Moms of Madison. We also host different events throughout the summer, educational events and family-friendly events. We host school groups and youth groups as well. And then a really big part of what we do is we grow a lot of produce to distribute for free to community centers on the north side. And we actually collaborate with a couple other farmers who are doing very similar projects, and also with Healthy Food for All and Neighborhood House. So we kind of all get together and talk about, you know, our projects and what we can do to support each other in, you know, raising money and figuring out the logistics and getting the produce where it needs to go. Fair Share CSA Coalition has long been a huge supporter of Troy Farm and long been hosting the Partner Shares program. And Troy Farm has been participating in that probably as long as it's existed. More recently, they started up the Community Partnership Program, which has been great and really a huge support to us to keep our purpose-grown project going and delivering to those community centers on the north side. So I want to give just a few more kind of details about the work that we're doing at Troy Farm with the Purpose Grown Project and in partnership with the Community Partnership Program at FairShare. So we're working with six different community centers on the north side, including Kennedy Heights Community Center, Vera Court Neighborhood Center, Lakeview Elementary, Sherman Church, Northport Community Learning Center, and Packers Community Learning Center. And we've been delivering produce to these locations, most of them, since 2020 when the pandemic got started. And, you know, we recognized there was a huge need for fresh local produce in communities that were really being hit hard by the pandemic and just were already in a food insecure neighborhood and situation. And we did that by packing produce into boxes and focusing on growing culturally relevant crops. And As time went on, we realized since we were close and it was fairly easy to do, we could just bring the produce and kind of lay it out more farmers market style so that people could get, you know, the choice of what they'd like to get and then how much in the quantity that they'd like. And, you know, this has been really great. I mean, it's been hugely popular and, you know, it's been great for us to really be able to get that produce directly to where we knew there were issues of food insecurity and be able to offer that choice and make that connection. You know, as a nonprofit, our job is to, you know, connect with the local community and really get that feedback of what the needs are. And so having that direct connection is great. I think some of the challenges really mostly relate to how do we get that produce best to people. So, you know, what do we grow? You know, sometimes there's things people want that we just can't grow because of climate or seasonality or logistics. And, you know, just making sure we get it there at a time where people can get it, you know, when we deliver and that it's convenient for people. But, yeah, I just want to, you know, give one more plug to Rooted in general because we're doing such great work in the areas of food access, land access, and education. And thank you all for your support and thank you for your time.
So I want to wrap up with a few quotes that we've heard from PartnerShares members. One member wrote, "Having a program like this helped our large family of six tremendously. Fresh organic food from our local organic CSA farmers was a perfect and a great way to help support our neighbors." Another member wrote, "As a person who depends on help with food with SNAP benefits, this was the perfect setup for me. I was able to meet the farmers responsible for growing the delicious food my family eats. I was proud of the PartnerShares program for promoting local farms and produce, and happy I knew money was going into the hands of hardworking local farmers." And we've talked a little bit about receiving culturally relevant food through the CSAs. Another member shared, "As a Mexican-American family, we love being able to enjoy farm-fresh, organic Mexican produce and herbs that are otherwise not available locally, from verdolagas to pepichas." Some members have shared with me that they depend on this fresh food for preventing cancer or relapse of cancer. There are so many more stories I could share about the PartnerShares program and the impact it's had on food access in our community. For now, though, I'll pass it over to Caroline and Chang Rai.
Hi, everyone. Thanks, Levi, for that wonderful section on our PartnerShares program. Those quotes were so heartwarming. Now we're going to transition into talking more about small-scale sustainable vegetable farming. We've talked about CSAs already, food access, and equity. But you might be asking, why should we care about supporting small-scale farms? So, Scott, why are small-scale farms important to our food system?
Well, you know, our food system is a complicated topic that we don't have a lot of time. We don't have enough time to unpack that all the way tonight. But I think if you look at the food system and the transitions it's gone through over the last few decades, what we've seen is a lot of consolidation and a steady decline in the number of farms and the number of farmers on our landscape. And small-scale farms offer an alternative to some of the monocrop systems that we see dominating our agricultural landscape in this day and age. They offer different ways for farms to make money. They offer our food system more broadly a different way to inject value into it and to bring produce and products, whether those are raw products or value-added products, into the food system in a more diverse and often in a more local way. The farms that the CSA farms that serve the Madison area grow all of this produce, probably almost all within state, and if not, very nearby. And they provide economic security and opportunity for Wisconsin's rural communities or Cleveland's rural communities or Cincinnati's rural communities or Portland's rural communities or wherever it is the case that these small farms exist. And quite frankly, small farms often see higher margins on a per acre basis than the large scale commodity crop farms that we have come to see dominate so much of our landscape in this day and age. And lastly, they offer an opportunity to diversify our agricultural landscape and address some of the environmental challenges that we face from nutrient runoff. When we see our lakes in the Madison area turn green in the summer, or when we hear about the widespread drinking water issues that families face in rural Wisconsin. So small farms offer a bunch of environmental and economic opportunities, both for our local communities, but especially for the farmers that are running them.
Thanks so much, Scott, for that wonderful explanation about why small-scale farms are important. Now we're going to head into a panel discussion with Scott, Merritt, and Chang Rai, where I'll ask each of them different questions all around the same topic. Just as a reminder, Scott is from Plowshares and Prairie Farm. Merritt is a current apprentice in our Organic Vegetable Farm Manager Apprenticeship Program, and Chang Rai is our current aggregation coordinator at FairShare, who helps support our Hmong grower program. In this first round, we'll start off with Chang Rai. So Chang Rai, what are some differences in the way that small-scale Hmong growers operate their farms and contribute to our local food system?
Yeah, thank you for that question, Caroline. You know, I want to start off like, if you go to any farmer's market in Wisconsin here, the majority, one of the biggest community in the farmer's market is the Hmong community. The Hmong community, one of the reasons why they depend on farmers market as their only main market outlet is they just have so many barriers for them to kind of have that breakthrough through these other market channels. But you know, one of their targets in farmers market is consumers, and they don't know what the consumers want. So their strategic plan is to grow as many varieties as they can. And they don't even know if they will be able to sell all of their produce at the end of the day. But, you know, they have to go in providing all of these varieties for consumers at the farmers market. But yeah, I feel like, through the farmers market channel, the Hmong community definitely has one of the biggest contribution to our local food system in the U.S.
Thanks, Chang Rai. Moving over to Merritt, what market avenues and programs do you help support as an apprentice and farm worker at Crossroads Community Farm?
Yeah, so Crossroads is a CSA farm, like we've been talking about. They have a summer CSA share that goes from, I think it's 18 weeks from like the first week of June to like the second week of October, roughly. And then they also have a fall CSA share that then goes from mid-October to about mid-December. They provide shares for about 850 households across Madison and the area. And with each week, we're packing about 550 because we also have an every other week share. They also provide food through wholesale, which is also... They go to Willie Street, all three of the Willie Street locations throughout Madison, and then they also sell to Garden to Be, which is an organization that then collects food from a bunch of different farmers and then sends it out to restaurants and other market avenues in Madison. And a big part of what Crossroads does is they have a big food access program, which 100 of those 550 shares per week is sent out to people who don't pay for them, which goes to about equivalent of 2,000 CSA shares in one season goes out to people for free across six different neighborhoods. And in 2023, about 30% of the produce that was grown at Crossroads went to people who didn't pay for it.
Wow, those are awesome numbers. I actually used to work at Crossroads too, and it was just so amazing to see the amount of food coming out of the ground and getting sent all over Madison, whether it be wholesale, CSAs, and so now we'll head over to Scott. Can you tell us a bit about why it's important to have different income streams as a small-scale vegetable farmer?
Madison is a really great community to be a CSA farmer in. We have a long history of supporting CSA farms in Madison, and and consumers are really lucky here because there are a lot of great CSA farms that they have to choose from. But we also know that consumer preferences change and that people don't just get their food from CSAs. They get it from groceries. They get it from farmers markets. They go to restaurants. And all of those different avenues offer farms opportunities to diversify their income streams, recognizing that things come up, like a pandemic in 2020, that can disrupt certain aspects of the food system. So for small diversified farms that rely on the direct-to-consumer avenues or a very short vertically integrated avenue, right, like Crossroads, who sells directly to Willie Street, who then sells directly to the customers, having a few different streams to account for market volatility, to account for the challenges that come from weather is really critical to creating economic security for those farms.
Great, thanks, Scott. We're gonna move into our round two of questions. Back to Chiang Rai. What would you say are some of the current challenges that Hmong growers face?
Yeah, so, you know, the biggest one off the bat would be market access. As Scott has mentioned before, you know, when COVID hit, farmers market was, it led farmers market to close down, and that made a huge impact on the Hmong community's revenue. And so, you know, it's important for these growers to have an additional market outlets for these type of situations. And, you know, there are numerous barriers amongst the Hmong community, such as language barrier, one of the biggest ones out there. It just kind of, you know, blocks that whole pathway of understanding different programs, gaining the skill and knowledge to help their farm business. And moving on forward, there's other barriers such as like infrastructure needs. Growers are, they don't have the proper cooling infrastructure to help them cool their produce so that they'll be able to enter these new market streams. And not having the knowledge of record keeping, post-harvest handling, harvest planning, any of these. And so they're just like mainly traditional farmers. They haven't breakthrough to any or learn any of these skills to be able to obtain other USDA programs that could benefit them. But one of the other big challenge that Hmong growers face is that they don't understand a lot of the concept of why wholesale markets is a good avenue, just with like the pricing and the time that's spent. They have a hard time understanding that time is money. And so this leads them to not just wanting to pursue wholesale markets at all and just strictly sticking with the farmer's market.
Thanks so much for that answer, Chiang Rai. We're also really grateful for all the work that you're doing at FairShare for the Hmong Grower Program to help Hmong growers get through these barriers, because there sure are a lot. Over to Merritt now. Merritt, what are some challenges that you've faced as a farm worker and apprentice?
Well, I think if you ask any farmer or farm worker, they'll tell you that farming is not an easy profession to get into. It's definitely hard on your body. You're working a minimum of 40 hours a week, and rain or shine. If it's 95 degrees, you're out there. If it's 45 and raining, you're also out there. So it definitely can take a toll on your body in getting through the season. Another struggle is the seasonality of farming. You aren't guaranteed a paycheck every week of the year. Over the winter, I had to get another job because I wasn't able to get enough hours at the farm to be able to pay my bills. So you don't know for sure like when you'll be done with the season or how many hours you're going to get each week. So there isn't the security of the paycheck during all times of the year, which can be difficult. Another thing is access to things like benefits and health insurance and retirement plans or a PTO. I know there's not a lot of farmers I know or farm workers who have access to things like that. And there's also a lack of legal workplace protections for farm workers due to the National Labor Relations Act and the Fair Labor Standards Act, which set agriculture as an exceptional industry, meaning that farm workers don't have the right to unionize, they don't have the right to receive overtime payment, and they also don't have a set 40-hour work week. So while farming is a very rewarding and awesome profession, it's definitely, there's some challenges that come along with it.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks, Merritt. And Scott, last question for this round. What do you see as the biggest challenge to small-scale vegetable farmer owners today?
You're really going to make me pick one challenge? I'll build off of what Merritt just said as an employee and recognize that there are some real challenges for agricultural employees in this country. Because of the low margins in farming, it's also really hard as an employer to find and retain employees and to often pay them the wage that they would deserve. And so employee issues and worker issues are a real challenge on the farm. The other two I will cite are changes in the market and climate change. We don't have time. We'll have to unpack those on another program.
Thanks, Scott. All right, our last round here, we're going to bring it back to Chiang Rai. Can you give us one way that you are currently helping Hmong growers through your work at FairShare?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just acting as that middle person to connect, breaking through the language barrier and being that person to take all of these information out there that's helpful for Hmong growers and dissecting it down to a language that's culturally relevant and that's able to digest from by Hmong growers and understand all of these different concepts within the food system and understanding, how to pivot the farm business moving forward.
Great, thanks. And Merritt, why is it important that FairShare continues to grow and expand the Organic Vegetable Farm Manager Apprenticeship Program?
Yeah, I have to say, so I finished my first season in the apprenticeship program. It's a 2-season program, and I've been really enjoying it. Along with the on-the-job training, we also do 3 different classes, which teach us some of the more technical things or things that are easier to understand in the classroom, like farm business management or how to make a crop rotation plan. And then along with the on-the-job training and the classes, there's also a lot of more informal learning experiences where we have, like, field days where everyone in the apprenticeship comes out and gets together and get to tour different farms. We have monthly apprenticeship Zoom calls where we have a speaker and learn about different topics as well as attending conferences. So this program has been very valuable for me. I think one thing that really drew me to this program is the fact that it is like a state-recognized apprenticeship program by the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development. So this is an apprenticeship that I can definitely put in my resume, and it'll show that I have the skills and I am qualified to be a farm manager.
Great, that's awesome. And Scott, last but not least, what is one way that your farm and other small-scale farms have benefited from FairShare's programs and support?
FairShare has been a huge help to our farm over the last 11 years. We benefited early on from the grower network that FairShare maintains and the real collaborative and constructive attitude that farmers throughout the FairShare network bring to the table and wanting each other to succeed in facing the challenges that come with growing crops in this difficult environment. And FairShare was also a huge help early on with establishing our customer base and helping customers find us. And so can't say enough when we were a new farm about the resources that FairShare brought to the table and really helped us get our feet underneath us and get started. And FairShare, as you've heard over the last 45 or so minutes, doesn't just help farmers. It also does a lot for eaters, right? All of us are either farmers or eaters, and some of us are both. And FairShare is doing really great work to serve both those communities every day.
Great. Thanks, Scott. Thanks again to Chiang Rai, Merritt, and Scott for providing this plethora of knowledge on small-scale vegetable farms through the lens of Hmong growers, apprentice and farm worker, and farm owner. It's so important to show up for small-scale growers and producers in our communities, especially as they continue to face climate and labor challenges. Next up, I'm going to toss it over to Claire to start our conclusion.
Thank you, Caroline. As you can hear, my voice has gotten worse. So I'm going to pass it over to Levi to wrap up the hour. But I just wanted to say how happy I am to be part of this really special organization. FairShare does a lot of awesome work in our community. Thank you for listening, and over to you, Levi.
All right, thanks, Claire. All right, so to wrap up the hour together, I'm really excited to share with you our new vision and mission statements at FairShare. We've been working closely as a staff and board to come to these statements, and they just feel really exciting. So FairShare CSA Coalition's vision statement is thriving farms, vibrant communities, fresh food for all. And our mission is to build resilient food communities by investing in farmers and empowering eaters. So really at the heart of our organization, we're focusing on collaboration between farmers, farm workers, and consumers to create a more equitable and resilient food system. Some of our key programs at FairShare to support farmers include education about production, promotion of CSA through marketing efforts, farm labor support, and the win-win setup that comes in our Partner Shares program. We also didn't even touch on our Midwestern Vegetable Growers Network, which is a huge network of support in the Midwest for especially vegetable growers. So now that we've discussed all of this, I want to just give you a few ideas if you're wondering about how you might be able to help local farmers. There are things like CSA signups out there, farmers markets, prioritizing local buying, advocating for farm-friendly policies, and donating to local organizations like FairShare that support local farming. If you're interested in learning more, there are a bunch of resources out there for you as well. You can look up more resources on CSA, local farming, and food access on websites such as ours, as well as WORT's Access Hour calendar, which has a lot of links and more information. So thank you so much for tuning it in.
Thanks, Levi. In our last few minutes, I want to bring it back to the beginning. Levi, I know you said you don't know what to do about eggplant, and Caroline has a great idea that she wants to share with everyone.
Yeah, so Levi, cooking with eggplant is actually one of my favorite things to do around the time where it's just in season, especially in July. I love to use either the globe or the Japanese varieties to make an Indian-style eggplant parmesan, especially from Nick Sharma's cookbook. I love going to the library to check out cookbooks because it's a simple way to be able to try out a lot of recipes. And I love his cookbook, and that recipe is a real winner, especially if you top it with some Thai basil.
Oh, that sounds great. I'm going to need to get that recipe from you, Caroline.
As someone who does not work on a farm, I feel like sometimes people who do work on a farm have some of the best ideas on what to do with their veggies. Merritt, do you have any favorite vegetables or favorite vegetable dishes you've whipped up over the past year, at FairShare, at Crossroads?
I have to say I'm a big butternut squash fan, so it's pretty awesome that I can have butternut squash from like September into like March. So one of my favorite things that I've been doing with it is I've made fresh homemade butternut squash ravioli with a sage brown butter sauce, and it's really good. I would recommend doing that with your butternut squash.
That sounds amazing. Scott, do you want to get in on this farmer suggested recipes?
This could be a whole segment in and of itself. I really enjoy the privilege of doing things like making pizza sauce out of cherry tomatoes, which is really hard for most people to do because cherry tomatoes are often something that is really, really popular, and you don't have pizza sauce quantities of cherry tomato sauce available. Well, we have an abundance of things. We can do stuff like that, and I made one of my favorite pizza sauces ever with an absurd amount of cherry tomatoes a couple of years ago. One of our favorite crops is garlic in all seasons. And generally when a recipe calls for a clove of garlic, we cook with a head.
That sounds great. Levi, do you have any ideas brewing in your mind now?
So many. I had dinner a couple hours ago, but I'm already so hungry again.
Me too. So we're going to wrap it up. Again, as Levi shared, the Access Hour calendar has lots of great resources that you can go to if you want to learn more. WORTFM.org/show/Access Hour, and you can click on the Access Hour calendar to learn more. Thanks so much for tuning in, everyone. We've really enjoyed our time together.
You've been listening to the Access Hour. The views expressed on the Access Hour do not necessarily represent those of the station's board of directors, staff, or programmers. Please remember that this show relies on your ideas. You can submit your idea by clicking on Sign Up to Host an Access Hour in the WORT website. The Access Hour is anything you want it to be.
You've been listening to WORT 89.9 FM Madison.
Is on Saturday, April 20th, and you're invited to celebrate the biggest day in records with WORT DJs. At the door, 4509 Monona Drive, Matt and Mike from the Mosh Pit will be spinning Heaviness from 1 to 3 p.m. And at Sig's Treasure Chest and Paradox Vintage Parking Lot Market, 222 North Street, you can catch DJ Chiara Skyro from Fuzzy Lifting Drink at 1 p.m., DJ Spin Cycle from Pan Africa at 2, Ms. Nikki from Soul Sessions and Her Infinite Variety at 3, and Bad Sister Heidi from Psycho Acoustics at 4. And if that's not enough for you, WORT is hosting a 420 Record Store Day after party at the Crystal Corner. Saturday, April 20th is Record Store Day, and it's exploding with Wart DJ goodness in Monona at the door and in Madison at the Sigs and Paradox Parking Lot Market. You are listening to WORT Madison.
Hi, this is Lauren Harris, and you're listening to The Mosh Pit with Matt and Mike on 89.9 FM WORT Madison.
Hi, kids! This is Brad from Bull, and we're here at WORT Madison. Where are we, Andy?
W-O-R-T, W-O-R-T, Madison, 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 W-O-R-T,
Madison, Madison.